Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
From KQED.
Well, he just said when he walked in, I was like, I gotta be careful. I don't make the cold open if I say something.
I'll leave the stupid stuff.
We all live in fear of Izzy's.
Izzy's judgment. What is she going to choose today? This is Political Breakdown from KQED in San Francisco. I'm Scott Schaefer.
And I'm Marisa Lagos. Today on The Breakdown, we will break down results from Tuesday's primary election, which ensured, among other things, that California will soon be without a female U.S. senator for the first time in 32 years.
That's right. Democrat Adam Schiff will face off against former baseball star and Republican Steve Garvey in November as voters leave two progressive women out of the top two, including Barbara Lee.
The reason being the first is important is because now there's a second and there'll be a third. And Latifah Simon is, I tell you, to have someone who has fought hard through her life with so many life challenges, and now she will be the next member of Congress from the 12th Congressional District.
And Governor Newsom's Proposition 1 to address the problems of addiction, mental illness, and homelessness leads, but not by much.
Yeah, we'll talk about that and how Democrats seem to have avoided disaster in a Central Valley House district they very much want to flip from red to blue in November. And our friend and colleague from the San Francisco Chronicle, Joe Garofoli, is here. It wouldn't be the day after the election, Joe, if you weren't here.
It's an annual visit.
It is. And we should say, for transparency, we are recording this at noon-ish on Wednesday. There will be more results later in the day, so keep that in mind. Let's begin by talking about turnout, which we don't know exactly what it's going to be because there's still millions of ballots left. But, Joe, we could have a historically low turnout. The all-time low was 31% for a presidential primary. We're right around that, heading for right around that. How does that reflect all of what we're going to talk about right now?
It was abysmal, and it was not reflective of what California looks like. It was the voters who have turned in their ballots thus far have been disproportionately older, whiter, and Republican. And you get crazy stuff that happens, like Steve Garvey being one of the finalists for the top two in the Senate.
It's the first of a doubleheader.
Yeah,
Hold on to the baseball metaphor.
Can I just say, with a baseball metaphor, that he is the underdog in November? He's going to have to steal a couple bases to win. I just want to own that metaphor.
I think he was known as Mr. Clean, right? Both his squeaky clean image, and he was a good batter. So maybe he can clean up.
But clearly the turnout, Joe, did help Garvey and Adam Schiff, who were the most moderate or conservative people out there.
Absolutely. In California, there's equal numbers of voters who are over 65 and under 35. The number of voters who are over 65 is almost 60%, while younger voters are cast ballots in the single digits. And this is something we're going to talk about almost in every race that we talk about today.
And I mean, we should say there's always a big gap. Older people always tend to vote more. We've often seen, you know, voters of color, particularly Latinos, sort of underrepresented compared to their percentage of the population. But it's even more stark in this election. And I think, to your point, Joe, it's affected local races, statewide races, and now this ballot measure that Gavin Newsom really needs to get across the finish line.
It's not for the lack of political energy. We see it on the streets all over the place in terms of younger people demonstrating against the war in the Middle East. So,
absolutely.
But they did not go to the polls.
Well, we want to talk about Barbara Lee a little bit. Joe, you wrote about her in the Chronicle, an icon for progressive voters. And last night, obviously, she knew it wasn't going to be her night. And among the people who spoke was Alameda County District Attorney Pamela Price.
It is unfortunate that money in politics is what too often decides the merits of the race. And it's un-American, it's undemocratic, and we have to fight back against it. We have a lot of work to do to fix our political system so that the value and the merit and the worth of people who have given so much to our democracy is actually recognized and appreciated.
So as Pamela Price said, you know, money was a problem for Barbara Lee, but it really wasn't her only problem, but, you know, not an insignificant one.
I think it's hard because we always say, you know, I think a lot of voters think, oh, it's all about money. If there's money in a race, that'll be what's win. But often what attracts the money is what the issue is. It's the same reason that you can't always say, well, that person voted for that, you know, policy measure because they were backed by that interest group. It's all interconnecting, right? And so I think with Barbara Lee, one of the challenges she had is she's run in a safe district for decades. This is not a place where she's had to raise money the way Katie Porter had to protect her very purple swing House seat in Orange County. And so when you have that history and then the added challenge of being a Black woman in America, let's just call it what it is harder to raise money, it is harder to get political support. And, you know, on top of all that, I think you can argue that Porter and Lee really split the progressive wing of the party.
Absolutely.
In this race.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
Joe? And Barbara Lee also, in addition to all those things, she did not spend a lot of her free time on MSNBC promoting herself over the last three decades. The number of people who didn't know anything about Barbara Lee at the beginning of the race is not much greater than the number of people who didn't know much about her or had an opinion about her at the end of the race. She just didn't have the money to tell her story when her consultants were saying, when people hear about Barbara Lee, they're like, oh my God, I really like her. But they didn't have the money to get it out.
And I think
her age probably, hurt her too.
She hated when I would talk about that and gave me an earful about it every time. But it's legit. It was a legit concern with a lot of voters. I love people almost to a person. They would say, I love Barbara Lee, but you know, they saw what happened to Feinstein, et cetera, et cetera.
And that is an example of how timing is everything. Yep. But also an example is this Gaza issue. I mean, I think when we were watching this a couple of months ago, we thought, wow, there's a real opening for Lee here. And for whatever reason, whether it was a lack of money, whether it was the fact that, you know, they all were still serving in Congress and trying to do their jobs and maybe not just do MSNBC hits, she didn't really consolidate that sort of anger and excitement over her position. And Schiff did a really good job of, you know, basically telling Democrats, hey, Trump's coming back and I'm the guy to stand in the way.
I want to pivot to San Francisco, where moderates had a pretty good night. London Breed was very happy. Voters did to free up the police and do drug screening for people who are getting public assistance. And Joe, I know you went to the moderates party last night. What was the mood?
I went from the Barbara Lee, and it wasn't a party. It was sort of a media
tribute.
Veil. Tribute, yes. Leetifah Simon, fantastic tribute to her there, and to the mods party, and that was hopping. It was a lot of energy there. And what surprised me was a lot of young people there, and it was a diverse crowd for what San Francisco looks like these days. But it was very surprising. In fact, I was teasing the organizers. It was a small room, and that they must have thought they were going to have a losing night, because we always have a small room when you think you're going to lose, so make the crowd look bigger. But this is a moment for San Francisco. This was a turn.
Wrote a piece. You co-wrote a piece in the Chronicle, and one of the headlines was San Francisco can no longer be called a progressive city. How much have you taken from that?
we've stirred a conversation on this one. Let's be real. San Francisco is progressive. And some of its shared values on abortion rights, LGBTQ rights.
And so is London
Breed
if she leaves the city limits.
Yes.
Let's be clear.
Everybody we're talking about would be called, would be like Che Guevara, where I grew up in Pittsburgh. You know, it's all relative. It's a shades of blue we're talking about. But this is the city that, you know, that we live and work in. What happened? San Francisco voters, they voted to loosen restrictions on the police, screen welfare recipients for drugs, a measure to boost developers to help them, you know, mm-hmm. build more, and they elected a slate of moderates to the local DCCC, which shapes the way elections are in San Francisco. A total flip from 4 years ago.
Absolutely, and of course, London Breed took a big victory lap, saying it's time for a change.
Yes,
which I don't think will be her message when she's running for re-election for re-election, exactly. All right, we have much more to talk about, including more about San Francisco when we come back. You're listening to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer.
Support for KQED podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app, Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
And welcome back to Political Breakdown. Scott Schaefer here with Marisa Lagos and Joe Garofoli from the San Francisco Chronicle. We were talking about San Francisco. So the MOD slate was elected by and large to the DCCC. This is the party board that kind of makes endorsements and that kind of thing. So is this like just a low turnout election and that's what happens? Or is there real momentum, Joe, behind this movement to kind of pull the city a little bit back toward the center?
I think there's both. Both are true. Look at the, you know, when you have the base of the progressives are younger voters, people of color. Those voters did not turn out in numbers reflective of their population and their registration. So that's what you got. But there is momentum here. There's a lot of people who are frustrated with how government is not working in San Francisco. This was a reflection of that.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say, too, that, like, we often see the pendulum swing in politics one way or and the other. And I think you do have to underscore that these were ballot measures that are really trying to tackle the most visceral and visible issues and that people are fed up with. And so I do think you may have some progressives who said, you know what, fine, let's try this. Let's try giving police back some of, you know, these powers that essentially have been taken away over the years because of distrust in the police. I mean, particularly things like drone surveillance and just surveillance technology in general,
facial recognition,
police chases. I mean, I think that there's going to be a real onus on police to prove that these powers are going to be used responsibly and that they're going to work to do the things that London Breed and others are, you know, promising. But I don't think you can say, I do think the electorate matters. I do think the money spent by a lot of tech groups mattered.
Big time.
I also think people are just fed up with the state of the streets and that they're willing to do things they may not have a couple years ago.
Yeah, right. I know people who voted for Barbara Lee for the U.S. Senate and then turned around and voted for these the drug screening measure
right.
and, you know, all the things that the moderates were pushing. You know, I do want to ask a question or I do want to just make a point as sort of a counterpoint, really, which is these two judges who had been targeted mm-hmm. for defeat by the same group of moderates that backed by tech money. What do we make of that? Is it just that maybe it was a, you know, it's a difference between an issue and a person and a position that you're voting on?
Yeah, I do think that, I mean, first of all, incumbency is strong in any race. Mm-hmm. And so if you're a low information voter, you probably just check the box for the judge. I don't think the judges running against them like made as clear and convincing of a case as maybe the mayor and her supporters did on these ballot measures. They had to be careful because they didn't want to be pigeonholed if they did win and be like taken off cases. And then I also just think that this may be a step too far even for San Franciscans, right, who are fed up. I think that there's not always a lot of interest in sort of injecting more politics into the judiciary. I think a lot of people feel like it's already over politicized. And at the end of the day, you know, like I heard one person say this morning, like, well, even if they kept their seats, they got the message, right? Like, I mean, this was a threat to their jobs. And I do think that, you know, I don't know if it'll change. They say that they're just interpreting the law impartially anyway. But clearly there's a sense that there's more eyes on courtrooms than there ever have been.
Oh, absolutely. And I think jumping off what you said, Marisa, is that it's very awkward with judicial races because the judges can't come out and say, well, if, you know, if elected, I will rule this way on those cases. It's not a real political.
Although they do that in other states.
They do that in other states.
not a good model.
No, it is not. And so I think it's a weird thing. And also, let's be real. You can appoint these judges, but there's no telling where the judges will be assigned. They could be assigned to traffic court. So we don't know, you know, what they were going to be. And not everyone's going to be doing criminal cases or drug court or what have you.
Yeah, let's move down the peninsula where Anna Eshoo, longtime congresswoman, is retiring. And there was a very vigorous race to replace her, Marisa. And the top two at this point, more ballots to count, former San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo, Joe Simidian, Santa Clara County Supervisor, followed by Evan Lowe, Assemblyman. And once again, we've talked about this the last couple of weeks. It's another woman in the California delegation being likely replaced by a man.
Yeah, and I think more striking is what we've also talked about, which is how these races were really influenced by the endorsements of the retiring women or women who are still out there. I mean, thinking about Pelosi backing Schiff, Barbara Boxer, former U.S. Senator backing Schiff in this race, you know, seeing Eshoo throw her support behind Simidian. And I think it does speak to like a broader question for Democrats, which is, are they really down for generational change the way that people like Pelosi have promised? Because we have not seen that sort of baton passing in a lot of these races. I mean, in some, yes, but it does seem like connections, long-term relationships, trust in those personal, you know, relationships is more important to them than helping raise up a new generation. And I think that that is at their peril to some extent. I mean, we're seeing so much anger already over Gaza. If things continue the way they are right now in that region, it's only going to get sharper.
In Pelosi's defense, I will say that she did, in fact, do a pretty good job of handing the baton off to younger leaders in the House, Hakeem Jeffries and others. So, you know, in that sense. But you're, to your point, Marisa, I think for a lot of old school Democrats and politicians generally, loyalty matters, relationships matter, and I think we saw that in those endorsements.
Oh, and definitely in the Pelosi situation, that was about loyalty. She gave Schiff a lot of plum jobs over the years, but he delivered. And he delivered, and he took a lot of heat for it, and personal death threats and have you. But you know, let's be real here. Pelosi does have a hand in the fact that there's not going to be a woman representing California in the Senate. She chose a straight white 63-year-old guy over Barbara Lee and Katie Porter. And because of loyalty or what have you, but she also unlocked her fundraising network for him. Wade Randlett, top fundraiser here, told me, he goes, that's like the Willy Wonka ticket when you get Pelosi to endorse you. So, it's real. We've pressed her on this, and she said, nobody has done more for women in the Congress than I have in the history of the Congress, she said. And then even at the Schiff Get Out the Vote rally in San Francisco last Sunday, she introduced him, and she said, I have nothing to apologize for my endorsement. So she's definitely feeling it on this, but very few people have pushed back on her publicly.
Let's move north, and this is kind of an insider story here, but Assembly District 2, where Jim Wood is leaving early to spend time with his family, I think it's his mom is not doing well. And so there was a very vigorous race to replace him, and Rusty Hicks, who is the chair of the California Democratic Party, had moved up to Arcata, and this is a district that goes from Santa Rosa all the way up to the Oregon border. And so Hicks moves there. He runs. He gets big endorsements from Newsom, from Jim Wood, and others. I think LaFonza Butler.
The
party. And so still counting ballots, but at the moment he's in third place behind Santa Rosa City Councilman Chris Rogers, who leads Hicks by less than 500. The Republican in the race from Del Norte County is in first. But what do you think, Marisa? What's the takeaway? We don't know yet. Hicks may still make it into the runoff. And I think given that district, the Democrat will likely win. But, you know, what's your take on that?
It's like the counterpoint to Schiff. Like, you see in some races, the party machine matters, but it only mattered with Schiff because he already had name ID and a lot of credibility among voters. Hicks is very well liked within the party, but he was not a household name. And I think it's just hard to come in, derogatively, you could call it carpetbagging, right? To just like walk into a new, you know, district and say, hey, I'd like this seat. I've been a big party activist. Voters may not buy that. Yeah. And I think, you know, this is where we see like just the benefit of retail politics and just voter recognition of folks. I mean, like you said, school board member, city councilman, these are names that people are probably hearing in their everyday lives way more than somebody who was at the top of the Democratic Party.
And can we make this about Newsom for a second?
Sure.
Yes. I thought this would be a receptive audience to that. The governor endorsed him. The governor rarely jumps in on a state assembly race. Also, Prop 1, governor put his face on that one, and that's, that may barely pass, but,
Yeah, you do wonder if he was the best spokesperson for that. Yeah. His approval rating's been dipping below 50%. All right, we could talk. There's so many things we could talk about, but I do want to talk about a couple of House seats, including one in the Central Valley. David Valadao is running for re-election, Republican. That's a seat that's, should favor on paper Democrats. Biden carried it easily. And the big concern for Democrats is that they were going to get shut out of the top two, that the two Democrats there were going to split the vote. That doesn't appear to be happening. Marisa, it looks like, again, a lot of ballots to count, but it does look like Rudy Salas, former assemblyman who narrowly lost last time around, is going to make it into the top two. You know, it would have been really bad news for Democrats if it had been two Republicans there. But this doesn't really ensure by any means that Democrats are going to pick up that seat.
It doesn't. But to your point, I mean, Salas lost by just a few thousand votes last time. It was a very tight race. This is a district that Democrats do have a registration advantage in. For them, it's going to be all about turnout. I know Salas got some heat last time for not having as good of a ground game. I think we can expect between national Democratic groups, labor unions, other others that I would be surprised if they made that mistake again, right? But it's still not over. I mean, only about a third of votes are counted. This is a district where we have seen in the past very slow vote counting. And, you know, Salas is about 6 points ahead of the other Republican, Chris Matisse, but that could change. I think it looks unlikely that he'll get shut out, but Democrats will still be watching these numbers closely.
Both Salas and Adam Gray are counting on they both, you know, narrowly lost, and they're counting on a presidential level turnout in the fall to put them over the top. Adam Gray has a whole spreadsheet he showed me. But the other thing is, let's look for here's where the shift windfall could come into
play.
We'll just leave it at this. A top Democratic strategist who we know, who does a lot of national races, told me last night at the Mods party, that's slightly outing them, that they were somewhat happy that there's going to be $40 million that is not spent on a Democrat-on-Democrat Senate race in California, which Schiff should win.
On the other hand, Garvey bring out more GOP voters who might be kind of soured on Trump or just conservatives? I don't know. I mean,
Schiff runoff would have really engaged Democrats, which could have helped in some of those down ballot races, but we're never going to know.
Yeah.
I want to go to L.A.
I'm just looking at this district result. So interesting.
Which one?
The Schiff seat. Is that where you're going?
No, okay. I wasn't going to go there.
I was going to say, you guys are mind meld.
We can go there if you want to go there. So that's the seat where it's obviously Schiff and Porter didn't run for re-election. So this is a seat that's, again, a safe Democratic seat. Laura Friedman is the only top woman running there, and she was doing well.
Well, it looks like it will likely be her and Alex Blinken, who's the GOP candidate there, which is so interesting because Anthony Portantino, state senator, Mike Fuhrer, who's a former state assemblyman and former city attorney down there, Portantino had way more money than Friedman, this will be an easy walk. I will say, Blinken is an Armenian name. That district's about 20% Armenian, my people. And that may have really helped him get over the finish line, and the just splitting of Democratic votes.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the other thing in L.A. I wanted to ask about is the DA race, another kind of a baker's dozen of candidates, actually an actual dozen. George Gascon, the reform district attorney, who many up in the Bay Area may remember. He was our district attorney and police chief for a while. 11 people challenging him, Marisa. Obviously, he got elected. He defeated an incumbent who was a more sort of traditional tough-on-crime DA 4 years ago, but we're in a very different environment right now. And although Gascon finished first, he's got a real fight on his hands.
Yeah, I mean, if these results hold, he will be facing off against Nathan Hochman. If you remember that name, it's because he ran for attorney general a few years ago. I would say he's a pretty traditional, kind of like old-school Republican, law and order candidate. I was sort of impressed when I interviewed him at his thoughtfulness when it came to some of the criminal justice stuff. He's not like a bomb thrower. He's not just a reactionist, like we should throw everyone in prison. But he is going to mount a much more conservative campaign to challenge Gascon's progressive credentials. And he actually re-registered as an independent. And I am curious if his Republican past could hurt him in deep blue LA County. But if you add up all the votes for those 11 challengers, I mean, Gascon's only sitting at about a fifth of the vote right now. So it will be a challenging race for him.
Yeah, all those candidates were to his right. Yeah,
and if Gascon goes down, it'll be Chesa Boudin, Gascon, and Pamela Price facing a recall, three top progressive prosecutors, not only in California, but across the country, that will make a statement.
Can I mention one other LA race?
Yes.
Kevin DeLeon.
Oh, my goodness. Near-death experience.
Winning almost a third of the vote in his district. This is the former state Senate president who got caught up in that racist tape scandal at LA City Hall. He had been pushed by everyone, I think up to Biden, to resign. And he has just refused and is leading this pack of candidates, some of whom have pretty high name ID. Miguel Santiago, Wendy Carrillo. I mean, these people who have been elected LA before. He's got about 27% of the vote right now. I think kind of on the Hicks thing, this just shows sometimes the sort of gap between the parties and, people on the ground. And also, I think, how much people have a memory of things, yeah, maybe.
Exactly. Well, and again, I think like Gascon, I mean, if you add up the numbers, I don't think he is, he's going to be the underdog in spite of coming in first. But just the fact that he survived and refused to resign like the others.
Right now, yeah. Yeah.
Well, our friend Melanie Mason of Politico wrote a great piece about the power of De Leon, and one of it is, he was stripped of all his committee assignments, and he's, virtually
out
powered.
In the wild.
He's
yeah.
out in the wild. So he had plenty of time to, talk to people in the neighborhood, talk to his constituents.
And talk to Spanish media.
Yes. And he has a connection to the community, and he's showing it. We'll see what happens in the fall.
Noting, though, that he was on the ballot for U.S. Senate 6 years ago, and Dianne Feinstein, very different.
He got 46% of the vote. Yes. All the red counties went for him.
Yes. He lost his own district, I believe, on that one. I'm pretty sure.
I love politics. All right, so much more we could talk about, but we'll save that for another day. Joe Garofoli, go write a headline, another headline
are
that we can
done?
Criticize.
Are we done here already?
What else do you want to talk about?
I don't know.
Do you have some bone you want to pick? No. Make a prediction.
It went by so quickly.
Make a prediction. It's a podcast. Come on. All right. We're going to wrap it up there. We have to go get a cocktail or something.
Some sleep, hopefully.
Some
yeah.
sleep, exactly. Sleep. Joe Garofoli from The Chronicle with Marie Salagos here. Thank you, guys.
Oh, thanks. It was wonderful, as always.
Thanks,
man. All right. That is a wrap for Wednesday, March 6th. Political Breakdown is a production of KQED. Our engineer is Seal Muller. Our producer, Izzy Bloom. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening.